where do you start? You know, it's the guy in the booth, first of all, getting him to have a look at it. Because what's he looking at? The guy's gone to grip his hand and he's just gone one of them. That's it. Happens 20 times a game. You know, if we cut that out, stuff like that, you know, the greatest English midfielder wouldn't have had a career. Because Paul Gascoigne lived off that. You couldn't get near him because of it. So it's just baffling. That referee just winds me up. It just winds me up. It's just pathetic.
Right. Hello. Welcome to another edition of Shoot the Defence. I'm your host, Stel. My co-hosts, as ever, are Steve Eyre, Rodri Giggs, and we have a special guest returning back to Shoot the Defence. It's Theo. How you doing, mate?
I'm good. Thanks for having me, as always. Pleasure to be on. Looking forward to the next hour or so.
And you've invested in a mic as well. Look at that.
Yeah, needed, like I was saying, all the podcasting. Thought I'd treat myself.
You know, sound a bit like Barry White now. Have you changed the sound levels? Huh?
Yeah, trying to deepen the voice after last time.
All good, mate.
As long as it's not COVID, then I'm all right.
Well, it's great to have you on, man. Thanks for jumping on. Wicked.
Yeah, cheers. Thanks for having me, man.
Anytime. Mr. Eyre, Mr. Talksport, Mr. Coach Extraordinaire. How you doing?
All right, sir. I'm good. Are you?
Oh, mate, Coach Extraordinaire. See what I did there? My God. I'm so good at this. I'm so wasted doing hosting. You good, man?
Yeah, I'm good. Are you?
Yeah, sweet as a nut, mate. Sweet as a nut. My Cypriot team won 2-0 at the weekend, but unfortunately, a friend of mine is out for the season. In fact, he's out for months. I did his ACL. It was just tracking back.
Not my dad.
No, Matt's in Australia.
Oh, right.
But Ernest Asante, he's a Ghanaian winger. And he joined the club in, when did he join us? September. And he took a bit of time to settle. But then his family went over to Cyprus to live with him in October. And he just hit he just was on fire, scoring goals in the front and centre. And yesterday, he was just running back. And his studs got caught in the turf, twisted his knee, and that was it. Pop. So yeah, I messaged him last night. He was at the hospital. And he messaged me today, goes, 6 to 8 months minimum. And he's 32. And I was like, Jesus Christ, if you're 24, 25, then it'd be bad, but you'd recover better. Because he's at that age where it's coming to the end of his career, I'm worried for him, man.
How long has he got left on his contract?
He's still got another year, which is a relief.
Hmm.
So, but, you know, if he's back December, January time, he's effectively only got 4 months to prove himself.
Yeah.
You know, and you lose that pace as well, because he's one of the fastest players in the world.
Yeah, it's the turning and the deceleration after them cruciates. You know that you're frightened of the twist, and I've done it twice myself. I've had it two years out twice.
Yeah,
and it's I could never really sprint, but for those sprinters, it's actually the change of pace that is the real problem. You sometimes get the running back, but the twisting and the turning and the slowing down, stopping, that's a problem. Mm-hmm. I had no problem slowing down and stopping.
By the sounds of it, he sounds not a heavy guy, so he's not carrying much weight. So, I mean, he's a fit guy, he's quick. You know, it's not like the old days that it's better surgeries. And just hopefully he has a good surgeon, a speedy recovery.
Well, I hope so. He's a really good lad as well. I mean, I remember... I'm going off subject here, but I remember when we beat Red Star Belgrade in the Champions League qualifier at the beginning of the season, he saved his shirt so that he could give to me to pass over to my nephew, who's a big fan of his, you know, and I'm out with him, got the shirt. He actually gave me a pair of Omonia sunglasses, like branded ones, which cost like 80 euros. I mean, you didn't have to do that, you know. When it was Christmas time, my mate Mike, who's the chairman of Omonia Youth, you know, Ernest sent a Christmas message for the kids, a video. You know, you don't have to do these things. You don't see that from
the
many
little things, isn't it?
Yeah, do you know what I mean? You know, my daughter's birthday, he texts me on her birthday. Just like little things. And, you know, he's such a top bloke. So to see that happen to him, I mean, it's not nice to happen to anyone, but for someone that goes out of their way, it's heartbreaking, man. I feel for him, really do.
Wish him all the best.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Rod, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good.
Yeah?
Yeah. Need a shave,
Is you going on podcasts, mate? And Yeah, absolutely smashing it. Well done.
Yeah, cheers. Yeah, did it? I did it about a month ago. You know, a long time ago. So, yeah.
And you revealed that you're releasing a book.
Possibly.
Okay. Well, I want to try something out here because you mentioned books, and I found a book lying somewhere. This book, I probably can't see it. See this one?
Yeah.
I won it in a raffle. I thought it was going to be toilet paper, but there's something I need to ask you. I've found a passage in this one, right?
Cool.
It's on page 67.
Yeah.
He says, "My brother Rodri also started a career as a professional footballer with Torquay United before ending up at Mossley, a good non-league club. Growing up, he was always interested in the game, but not obsessed like I was. He's right-footed and plays up front or on the right wing. Similar style to me. His nickname is the Tripod." Why would he put that in his fucking book?
"My nickname is the Tripod."
No bigger accolade, mate. Literally. No bigger accolade.
I'm joking. It wasn't in there. Just having that bit at the end.
Yeah, I'm thinking, why would he fucking say that?
Yeah. Yeah, no. Like I said, I actually haven't read it. I'm not going to lie. I've had it for about 6-7 years, and I haven't actually picked it up to read it. I'm just so lazy when it comes to that. So when you get yours done, I promise I will read it.
Yeah, that'll book be mostly pictures, won't it?
Yeah, there's actually one of you. Let me see if I can get it. Hang about. I don't know if you can. Hold on a second. There's one of you. It's a really cute one as well. It's like, oh my God, you're such a cute kid. That one there. Oh God, you can't even see it. Fuck's sake. Let me see if I can screen on it. Share screen. This is so like amateurish. Can you see it?
Oh yeah. Yeah, well that's the problem when I was younger. I was really darker than I am now. It's, I don't know, maybe because I was out in the sun all the time. I don't know.
Well, you're a cute kid there, Rod. Come on now. Come on.
Yeah. I think his nickname was Arnold. You remember Arnold? Different strokes. Chubby
yeah.
chin.
It was. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Is that
yeah.
what they mean? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Nice. All right. Okay. Fair enough. See, even Caesar's going on that now. Behind you.
Yeah. Good family times.
Right. Let's talk about the Premier League, shall we? And Steve, let's start with you, mate. I know you were on TalkSport earlier, talking about Bielsa and the victory for Leeds at Man City, 10-man Leeds at that. 5 changes from Man City. First of all, did you expect that kind of performance from City, given Leeds' misfortune, so to speak?
I think I was expecting, obviously, a little bit more. I wasn't expecting for City to lose still. But equally, you know, especially when Leeds went down to 10 men, we're used to having all the ball and attacking the other team's penalty area. I don't think, I know he's had a lot of praise this year, and rightly so, but I don't think I've ever seen a centre-half performance like John Stones's on Saturday, where he was basically taking the ball from centre-half and dribbling towards the opposition's box, possibly with just one player to beat before a wall of 9 Leeds defenders when he got there. But he was like, talk about turning defence into midfield, into attack. Obviously, when he got there, there was a load of bodies. But what City were faced with at weekend still was a resilient team, a spirited team with the manager. They all play for him and run for him. But once they defended, they wanted to run forward. And they still ran forward in the 93rd minute or whatever it was to win the game. And could have actually done it 6 minutes before. So, you know, what he's got as a method there is that you don't just defend and hold your position. You know, if you've got a chance to run with the ball and teammates can go with you, you must go. And it's credit to them. Let's probably see them being this hit-miss or maybe team that we have kind of like respected when it goes well for them. But certainly it went well for them Saturday with no bigger or better result from domestically.
Mm. Theo, I don't know if you remember when Chelsea beat Leeds under Frank Lampard. And I think Lampard, again, correct me if I'm wrong, but Lampard said if you outrun them, then you've got every chance of beating them. But that wasn't necessarily the case at the weekend with Man City because they did outrun Leeds. But they just weren't putting their chances away. Do you give credit to Bielsa for this victory, or was it just like Man City one eye on Dortmund?
I think I think it's a bit of both. I think you know, obviously Bielsa, he can get the best out of his team. I wouldn't give him all the credit. I think defensively Leeds were perfect. Even when they went down to 10 men, they were still attacking. You know, they were still trying to get the goal. I think Rafinha had a brilliant chance. Possibly should have just, I think he tried to get it onto his right foot, and Ederson, you know, done what he needed to do. But I think credit to them, credit to Leeds. It was strange seeing Pep make 7 changes. I don't know if he needed to do that. But I remember the 1-1 game, I think, at Ellen Road. That was end-to-end as well. That was quite an intense game for City. It was, you know, intense game for both teams. But, yeah, like you said, you know, City were just wasteful with the chances that they had. I think Gundogan had some brilliant chances as well. But, yeah, I think, you know, Manny's got to take some of the credit for it. But I think you got to look at the defence, defensively, how Leeds played. They were just brilliant. They didn't put a foot wrong. And like Steve said, you know, they had plenty of chances to go 3-1, 4-1 up at one point. So, you know, I have to discredit them for that.
Rod, if City weren't 14 points clear at the top, do they lose that game? Because I asked Steve before we started recording, you know, if City weren't so far ahead, I don't think they'd have lost that game. I think Guardiola knew that he could take the foot off the gas in this one. They've got 3 more wins and they're champions, really.
No, the results, I don't think the result would be the same if the team was different. You know, he's changed. There's a lot of changes, and you know, yes, they're quality players, but you know, sometimes, you know, back against the wall, 10 men, Leeds, you know, they did play well. Yes, they were back against the wall, and City had some chances, but you know, it was a good result for Leeds and a good game. You know, City were just off it. Very, very rarely are they off it. And they were just off it and got caught on the day because, you know, 9 times out of 10, 10 men against City, you know, you're going to get pummeled. And so, yeah, it was just a one-off, I think. And I was going mad. Yeah, just a one-off. It's a good result, Leeds, and they can do that to anyone. You know, they'll let goals in, but they score goals as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, Steve, one final question with regards to Man City. When do they wrap up the title?
Well, I don't know the fixtures in advance of what's coming, but I don't expect them to lose any. You know, they'll get it in the next 3 league games. You know, if it's 3 wins, they'll get them. But it doesn't, you know, they'll want it as early as possible. And then they can just hopefully, obviously, you know, not being too silly here, it's all but theirs. But then they can just put that to the side and celebrate it properly at the end of the season. And they can carry on with good football behaviour and press on towards an FA Cup semi-final, which is this weekend, a League Cup final against Tottenham. And obviously the Champions League experience with 1 foot in the door already from the home leg against Dortmund. So, It's absolutely amazing. And while City and myself had a bad Saturday, there'll have been a lot learnt from it. And we're going to win from Saturday's experience because I think look at the team that we want to pick that team again.
Yeah, I think the earliest City can win it is the 8th of May, which is at home to Chelsea, because I think you've got, according to this list in front of me, you've got Dortmund next, then Chelsea in the Cup, Villa at home in the league. Then you got the EFL Cup final against Spurs on the 25th. Then Palace away, which Palace have got the deck chairs out already. Yeah. And then Chelsea on the 8th. But obviously with Chelsea in contention for top 4, I think after that you've got Newcastle away. So 12th of May. Which would be quite fancy because I think when you almost sealed the title under, was it Pellegrini or was it Mancini? When you beat Newcastle 2-0 away from home. When Yaya Toure scored twice.
Yeah. But, well, you've just mentioned the fixtures there. I'm going to say it now. I hate the phrase. I never use it in a sentence, really, about dead rubber. But Crystal Palace should be fairly straightforward. And I think Aston Villa the same. But the games against Newcastle and Chelsea should be absolutely fascinating from their point of view. One trying to stay out at the bottom 4 and one trying to get in the top 4. So it'll be really, really competitive and it keeps Manchester City honest.
Brilliant. All right, since you mentioned Chelsea, Theo, big win for you guys against Crystal Palace. Tommy Tickle is in full force at the moment. It was a crushing defeat against West Brom. the other week, which obviously you don't want to discuss, understandable. But let's be honest, it was a fantastic win midweek against, who did you play in the Champions League? It's gone on my head now. Porto, thank you very much. See, thank you. See, little attention I pay against that competition, which my team is never in. But yeah, so listen, Crystal Palace, nothing really to play for. I guess players are playing for their contracts, given I think 10, 11 players are out of contract this summer. There's speculation that Roy Hodgson is going to call it a day. Don't know whether that's true or not, but it's a professional performance, good victory. And Kai Havertz having a good game as well.
Yeah, I think from the start, you know, I thought Palace were just, like you said, the debt shares were out. You know, they didn't turn up. I think it was interesting because obviously Tuchel played with a false nine in Havertz. Something that he hasn't really tried. I still think Tuchel doesn't really know his best 11. I don't think he's got an idea, really. He's still testing out certain players. I do think he had one eye, obviously, on Porto. They had some key players missing on last Wednesday. So, obviously, tomorrow's game on Tuesday is obviously in the back of his mind as well. So, I think playing Hudson-Odoi sort of right back. I think he's changed Alonso, put Chilwell in as well. And obviously, like you mentioned, Havertz, but we started the game really well. I don't think Palace were, you know, Palace defensively were really narrow. They did, obviously, the false nine, they didn't know how to mark the front three in Mount, Havertz and Pulisic. They found it difficult to do that. Cahill just looked old, you know, looked like he'd had enough. The goals are just, I mean, Havertz took his goal really well. He had another chance to get a brilliant one. It was almost like Bergkamp where he took it out of the air. Flicked it over, I can't remember who the Palace defender was.
Was it Kvyat?
I think it was. Yeah, I think it was. And, you know, he had a chance to do that. He could have got a hat-trick easily. Easily got a hat-trick. Pulisic as well, getting two goals. But I thought Mason Mount again had a brilliant game. I was critical of him last season. But he's shown that he's, even obviously a lot of people thought when Tuchel come in, Havertz was going to be the star boy. He was going to take Mount's place, and you know he's dug deep. He hasn't sulked. He's just got on with his game. And even for the free kick, you know, again, Gary Cahill for me should be doing better. You know that he's an experienced defender, experienced centre back. To let Zuma just almost, you know, lean over him and just do what he done was, you know, it's just comical for me. But you know, all in all, I think they only had one shot on target, and I think they scored from it with Benteke. You know, so they were just sloppy with the passing as well. Like you said, you know, 11 players, you'd think they would have put in a bit more of a performance from their angle. But you know, we needed that win. We needed it to go into the game against Porto with a bit of form, bit of confidence as well.
Yeah, and the brace for Christian Pulisic on WrestleMania weekend. Yeah. Ironically, there you go. This is a question for you, Theo, and Rodri. Christian Pulisic, it's not that I don't rate him, but I think he's quite overrated from a social media perspective. And by that, I mean, you've got a whole load of people on social media that love the guy. A lot of them are Americans anyway, which is understandable. He came to Chelsea with a big price tag, big reputation, I guess. Did well at Dortmund, but he struggled in the Premier League. I don't know whether it's the physicality. I don't know whether it's because he's been unfortunate with injuries or more. Can you put your finger on it at the moment, Theo?
I think it's just, you know, he has been injured. I think he's only scored, I can't remember many goals he scored this season. It's not many. I know he scored four goals in games against Palace, which doesn't really tell you a lot. But I think a lot of it's down to injuries. You know, I think it worries me because I think he has one really good game and then he'll have a mediocre game and then he's injured for 3 or 4 weeks. So you don't see him. So I don't think we've seen the best of him at Chelsea. I understand what you mean about it, the sort of hype around him. You know, people would, before he even come to Chelsea, they dubbed him the new Hazard and he was going to be this and doing all that kind of stuff. And we just need to let him play his football and see what he can actually do rather than trying to compare him. I hate all that comparing, you know, comparing him to other players and stuff like that. I just let him get on with the football. I think he's a talent. I think he'll be, I mean, he's still quite young anyway. I can't remember how old he is, but he's still quite young. Early 20s, I think, mid 20s. So he's got a lot of football ahead of him. But yeah, no, I agree. I think he's got to try and stay fit next season. I think that's the key thing because I don't think Tuchel's going to want to wait around. He's got his own ideas of who he wants to probably bring in. So he's got to try and stay fit and fight for a place like all the other Chelsea players have as well.
Yeah, and I think with Pulisic, the majority of his injuries have been muscular injuries. I know he's had calf strains, calf injuries, hamstring injuries. And, you know, Rod, for a skillful, pacey winger, because that's effectively what he is, isn't he? He's a winger. He's not a forward or a striker. He's a winger. You know, these muscular injuries take their toll over a course of a season, especially over the course of a career. And again, he came with a big price tag, big reputation. And as Theo said, the comparisons with Hazard, which are quite asinine if you ask me, because Hazard did remarkably well at Chelsea and you can't really draw any comparisons. But, you know, he really needs to have that luck to be injury-free, doesn't he, to be a success at Chelsea, no?
Well, you say luck, you know, is he doing all the right things? Because, excuse me, if he's picking up, you know, injuries, you know, time and time again, or is it something he's doing? Or is the Premier League just too physical for him? Because when he comes to Chelsea, he looks a half-decent player, but he's obviously tailed off. But is he one of them players that needs games and he can't get a run of games because he's either can't get in the team or he's injured? So, you know, I'd question if he's doing everything off the field. You know, if you keep on getting these muscle injuries, you know, is he eating right? Has he got the right cars? Is he sleeping in the right bed? All these kind of things that you've got to assess, you know, it's your job, basically, to look after yourself. So you've got to get to the bottom of these things, because if you keep on getting injured, you're no good to the team and you'll be surfaces for requirements. So, he's got to try and stay fit and get a run of games, because when he does get a run of games and he is playing well, he does look at an exciting player, but like I say, and like Phil says, you know, it's one in five at the minute.
Yeah. But he's been fortunate this calendar year with injuries. He's been all right, but he started the season with a hamstring injury that kept him out for 2 months, and he came back beginning of October, and I think he had to quarantine after that, because I think there was a COVID scare, wasn't there? So he was in quarantine for a week or something like that, 10 days. And then he came back, and then he picked up another injury, and he was out the whole of November. So he's been back since the beginning of December. So he's been lucky in that respect without any injury. So maybe
is he doing the right prep work to come back fit? Is he doing the right gym work? Because if he's picking up these same injuries, you know, you've got to question his preparation. It happens time and time again. Is he doing the right stuff?
Yeah.
Or he's just basically not strong enough for the Premier League. It's too physical for him.
Yeah, possibly. But the thing is, he's been suffering from muscular problems since his time at Dortmund. And this is the thing. I don't know whether it's... Steve probably knows better than me. In fact, he does know better than me. When you've got growth spurts, Steve, for youngsters, and playing elite-level football, that must have an effect, no? Surely.
Yeah, definitely. And I think I would agree more with what Rodri said second. I don't believe anybody at the top of the Premier League at a club like Chelsea aren't preparing properly, eating properly, sleeping properly. But there will be obviously a reason that he keeps re-injuring. And I don't think that will be anything to do with preparation. I think more so the physicality of the Premier League. I do think he dribbles into contact and conflict. I don't think he flies down the wing like a Traore of Wolves who gets open space. I think he's often in and around bodies from a standing start position, which is obviously a change of pace. And a lot of people in the old days, Stel, when you used to get muscle injuries, used to check your feet. But what they're finding these days now, that they're actually working it from the neck and the bite of the teeth very, very often. A lot of these players, this is genuine, you know, this is, you know, a lot of these players like Jordan Henderson, for instance, Daniel Sturridge, I did get told off someone, it hasn't been proven, so this isn't factual, but a lot of these players that have all had the teeth veneered, I've had the teeth veneered whilst the body were in a certain position whilst they were doing it. And then that means that, you know, the bite is always going to be the same and they're always going to be in that position, which possibly is from an injured position. So a lot of people now at the top in France, I know, even China, they're questioning players and human beings' bite. It used to be the feet, fallen feet, flat arches, flat feet, but now it's actually going from the top downwards and people are looking at neck stiffness and bite, which can often cause further problems down below in your sporting injuries with hamstrings, groins and calves and whatever else. So it'll never actually get perfect, but that's what they're looking at now, I believe.
I've got to stop 1 minute, Dale. I've got to touch on this at the start where, you know, he does fly into to tackles or to challenges, where you know most wingers or people of his size kind of ride them tackles because they're not strong enough to take the impact that he's taking, and that's why he's getting these injuries possibly, because you know some players are clever and they know that the tackles are coming and ride him. Is he being a bit clumsy and a bit full-blooded and it's just his body can't take it?
Yeah, that's a point. That's a fair point, actually. Very good point. Very good point. All right. That's the first game for the race of the top four. Chelsea are now down to fifth, if I'm not mistaken. And that's because West Ham leapfrogged them after beating Leicester City 3-2. Rod, did you see that coming, especially with Declan Rice and Mikel Antonio out for West Ham?
Yes, because, you know, they're not a two-man team. They've still got some very good players. You know, so, I didn't see him going 3-0 ahead, but the scoreline was more like it. But, yeah, it was, they just shoot themselves in the foot. No, it's just not the first time as well. So something Dave Moyes clearly wasn't happy about after the game. I mean, he should be buzzing with a 3-2 win. But, you know, when you leave it, like, as a manager, you know, Stead will tell you, just in the last 5-6 minutes when you've been winning 3-0 and just coasting, and the next minute you're looking at, you're going to get a point here. So, yeah, it's just a matter of concentration. That's all it is down to the players, because the players have played very well, gotten themselves in a great lead. And it's all purely down to concentration. That's all it is. So, you know, it's just personal errors, giving the ball away in the wrong area, you know, where they haven't done it for 60, 70 minutes. And then, you know, is it the tiring? Is it putting too much in? You know, I'd more think it was the first one. They just need to concentrate more.
Yeah, because I guess they've learned their lesson from the Arsenal game, because I think they were 3-0 up then and then they conceded before half-time. And that's one of the worst times to concede a goal, because effectively you're giving the opponents the impetus to go forward.
No, but if you're 3-0 up and you score one, and then but if you score the second one, then it's squeaky bum time then, especially with Leicester, were putting it on them. You know, they could have scored. So, you know, David Moyes, he didn't look happy afterwards, and you know, he should be buzzing, because Leicester are a good side and it was a really, really good result for him.
Yeah. Rod, do you think Souček will be in with a shout for being in contention for Team of the Year, if not Player of the Year? Because I think he's been fantastic for him.
You know,
no,
it's tough in there, in the middle three.
What, for Team of the Year?
Yeah, well, De Bruyne, Fernandes, there's two.
Gundogan.
Mm-hmm. Has he been better than them? He's been fantastic for West Ham, but you know, is he been that good to be in? You know, he'd be a sub for me, but he won't be in the three, because you know, the three players that were just named there are far better seasons and high up in the league. You know, like, can't argue what he's done with West Ham. It's a fantastic season, but you know, Premier League 11, you know, maybe he's a sub, but yeah, not.
I'm with you completely.
I mean, the reason why I think he'll be in it is because of the team that he plays for. That's it. If he was at Man City and Man United, he'd be a shoo-in, because his performances would be even better, I guess, because he's playing with better players. But it's West Ham. No disrespect. No one expected West Ham. Okay, I said a couple of years ago that they one day could be challenging for top four. That was in the Pellegrini.
But you've got De Bruyne, Fernandes, Grealish. You've got, you know, a lot of Mason Mount. You know, a lot of players in there. No, yes, I agree with you. He's done fantastic. And if he was with another club, maybe. But I still wouldn't put him ahead of five of them players.
Mm. I'm same with you, mate.
Okay, fair enough. Steve, Leicester City, are they in free fall now? Because we saw the back end of last season how they capitulated. And obviously, I know they've got the FA Cup, both eyes on the FA Cup now, because they're at the Europa League and, you know, top four isn't guaranteed for them. But I don't know, do you think, you know, it's back to how it was last season, this stage of the season where they're kind of, I don't know, just dipping form and to slip out of top four?
Yeah, well, we did say it last week on your show, Stel. It's a great question you've just posed there. I don't think free fall is fair. I think that would be too strong. But at the same time, I think they're on the slide. Other teams, we've just mentioned a load of players, a raft of players who are all improving. It looks to me, no disrespect to the Leicester team, but, you know, there's only really Iheanacho improving. Maybe he needed to improve, but he's certainly getting better week by week. Albrighton's coming in doing a good job, and they've still got pace and energy in the team. But you're hearing about three lads with protocol of breach of COVID. The club decided to discipline them by either not selecting them, or they weren't allowed to, or whatever. It appears that Jamie Vardy's getting having less prowess and seems to be getting wider into the left channel, further away from goal, which is making Iheanacho a better player, but not basically Leicester City's best player. Kasper Schmeichel, I think, is absolutely brilliant. Johnny Evans too. But I just don't think they're going to have enough to go course and distance to kick back in and go on any type of run. And I think it will just be almost win, lose, draw, possibly till the end of the season, which for me will see them out of the top four still.
Theo, you're nodding your head. You think Leicester are going to slip out?
Yeah, I think there's what Steve said about the three players missing was crucial yesterday. At a time at this point in the season as well. You know, I looked at their bench yesterday. It was, you know, I didn't even recognise some of the names on there, you know. So, I think out of those teams that we're talking about for maybe the final Champions League spot, you got to look at Liverpool, who have come into a bit of form. I know they've had a tough home record. I think that was their first decent win at Anfield. Obviously, Chelsea are in contention. I think they always seem to stumble at the last hurdle. They don't really get over the finish line, and for whatever reason, but I agree. You know, I think Vardy, you know, isn't the same Vardy that was there a couple of seasons ago. Iheanacho has been brilliant for them. He's been carrying the team for some weeks now as well. But some of the players that they've got there should be stepping up a bit more. I think, you know, there's still enough in there. They've been amongst the top four for so long now, for two seasons, and then to miss out on it for two seasons tells you something needs to probably change. Maybe they need to have a look at some of the areas that they need to strengthen on going into next season, because, you know, it's two seasons now that they might miss out on Champions League football. You know, obviously they were unlucky because of the pause last season, but, you know, they might miss out now, yeah.
Do you know what? I think the past couple of seasons, the issue with Leicester, okay, granted, it's been the injuries and suspensions, etc. But I think they're still in this mentality where it's like, yeah, we need to find bargains. Tielemans is a bargain, Fofana is a bargain, etc., etc. But you've got the money. You've got the financial clout. Go spend 20, 30 million pounds on a striker. Do you know what I mean? They can do it. So I don't know why they're holding back. I really don't know why.
I think one of the problems as well is that they've lost a lot of good... I mean, they lost Kante, who was a good player. And I don't think they really... I mean, he's I wouldn't say he's irreplaceable, but he's definitely a massive void. And I don't think... I mean, obviously, again, Harry Maguire, who I know he went for a lot of money to United, but they still haven't... And I like Fofana as well, but I just think they haven't really recruited well. In my opinion, I like Tielemans as well. I think he's a good player, but I just think they've got to look at addressing, you know, a Jamie Vardy, Kasper Schmeichel's still a good goalkeeper, but, you know, they've got to address some of these things going into next season, because they should be, I mean, on paper, they shouldn't really be where they are in the league, if we're going to be honest, in my opinion. You know, they haven't got a better squad than Liverpool or Chelsea, in my opinion. So I do think they're overachieving, but... Mm. You know, I do think they've got to look at those kind of gaps in the squad next season as well.
Gents, let's not forget that Albrighton hardly ever scores or never scores. They're missing out on Harvey Barnes, who's up, good for double figures. Madison's been injured with a hip problem and then comes back and has a night out or whatever he did, and he doesn't play with COVID. And Vardy's not quite recovered, although he's back playing again from his surgery or injury, and he's getting further away from goal. So, you know, they don't really score from centre-halves coming up from for set plays like West Ham. So there's a real void in terms of what they can achieve in games. And thankfully, at the moment, if it's for Iheanacho, but if it wasn't for him, it doesn't look like it'd be anybody else with Vardy not firing and Barnes injured. So I only see them fading still.
Agreed. Right, let's quickly talk about Liverpool, Steve. We expected them to make a go of it to get back into the top four. They got a good victory the weekend against Aston Villa. Practically a full-strength Liverpool side, minus two central defenders who've been missing the whole season anyway, but the other nine players that played, bog standard. But you know what? They put in a shift. It could have been four. It could have been five. But a lot of people are talking about the offside decision, the shoulder decision, the offside decision, the VAR choice. I don't know if you saw that one. What I want to talk to you about, actually, is Sadio Mane, whose form has gone completely out the window. Now, I've heard whispers that he'll be off in the summer. I've also heard that he and Salah, their relationship is irreparable. And I think, to me, it seems that Liverpool have made the decision now. It's like, well, they can't keep both, and he's the one that needs to make way. Now, if that's true, do you think that's the reason why he's being put on the bench or not given opportunities? Or is it just that his form has dipped and Salah's doing well and Jota's back?
Definitely the last thing you said there, because Jota's back, making it four top players for three slots. So it's up to the manager who he chooses. You've obviously got the team play of Mane or the individual numbers and brilliance of Salah. They've certainly played well together, you know, for seasons. They're not just fly-by-nights. And now possibly, you know, certainly Mane looks frustrated when he doesn't get a pass from Salah, but it never boils over. I notice they never continue a war of words from left wing to right wing and back across. It's more of a glare or a sulk. I think the manager obviously manages the team well. I think they've benefited still from just sticking with the centre-halves to allow them to be better, these young centre-halves, Phillips and the player they signed from Schalke, to just be better then in centre midfield, to be then better in attack. So Liverpool are a better team again. But to your question, I actually think it's the last thing you said, Stelle. In terms of freshness and eagerness, Jota looks the most likely to score despite Salah's numbers. And he looks like he can threaten a starting place and be a first choice before any of them at the moment.
Mm. So are we still sticking by Liverpool will get top four?
In one word, I'm going to say yes.
Yeah, that's what we went with last week. So I don't think anything's changed. Oh, 100%. 100%. I think West Ham or Leicester will drop out. Chelsea will get in there. Yeah. And it'll be the big four.
Lads, what do you think, lads?
Yeah, I think the same. I think Liverpool have just hit a good bit of form. I think Salah's is on, 28 goals or competitions this season as well. Obviously, there's been the talk around Alex-Arnold as well before the game, and I think it's helped that Fabinho's back in midfield now. I think he needed to be in midfield. I know obviously Klopp didn't really trust Kabak, but you know the centre backs, you've got to trust them. You brought them in for it to do a job; they've got to do the job. But you've noticed a difference with Fabinho in midfield. Yes. Obviously Thiago as well. He's been. I'm not sure about Wiji. I don't know if I put Wijnaldum. I don't know why he started him the other day, but yeah, you know, I think they'll make it, and I think Chelsea should push on now and you know, definitely secure top four.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Well, I mean, look, I think we spoke about this last week. Five of Liverpool's last seven games, they'll win. You know, they've got Southampton, West Brom, Burnley and Palace as their last four games. I think the two difficult ones are Leeds away and Man United away, but they've got Newcastle at home. So I can't see them not getting top four. I can't see it.
We covered it last week, didn't we? I think I said Leicester, but looking at this week, I think, you know, Chelsea having their blip last week, I think they'll be finished strong as well. And like you say, I think Leicester win one, lose one, draw one, win one, lose one, draw one. So, but West Ham look strong as they get players back, but yeah, I still think Chelsea and Liverpool.
There you go.
And obviously the two Manchester clubs.
Okay, let's talk about the other Manchester club then, Rod. Big win against Spurs after being a goal down, but let's first talk about the goal that wasn't given, Cavani's. Even now, I look at the penalty decision that wasn't given for Newcastle, where the player was almost decapitated, right? But Son gets a poke in the... His eye wasn't even poked. It's like his eyelashes were brushed and he went rolling down, holding his face. Talk to me, man.
No, you know, Where do you start? You know, it's the guy in the booth, first of all, getting him to have a look at it. Because what's he looking at? The guy's gone to grip his hand and he's just gone one of them. That's it. Happens 20 times a game. You know, if we cut that out, stuff like that, you know, the greatest English midfielder would he wouldn't have had a career because Paul Gascoigne lived off that. You couldn't get near him because of it. So it's just baffling. That referee just winds me up. He just winds me up. It's just pathetic. It's just, you know, and then you get the clown afterwards with classic, you know, defection technique of going about, you know, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer about food. It was a metaphor, you pillock. He didn't actually not going to feed his child. You know, and it's just comical. Come on, Jose. Come on, mate. You didn't actually mean it. You're a clown.
He tried to keep a straight face. You know he was...
It's just, mate. This has been done and done and killed by Ferguson. It's just done. You know, take the defection off your team and come up with some crap about it. And I've spoke to Ollie and told him how I feel. He obviously clearly didn't mean he wouldn't feed his child. Or Marcus Rashford wouldn't blame for him. So... It's just daft.
Jesus Christ. But you know what? It's funny because what you just said about what Gascoigne did, you're right. It happens every bloody game. You know, it goes back to what I said with the Newcastle incident. The guy almost had his head taken off and that wasn't a penalty, but...
No, Pogba did it early in the game. You do it. And sometimes, you know, Fellaini always doing it because he was so big, he's catching people in the temple and the jaw, and you know, so it looked bad, but he's just put his arms up to protect himself. It's what footballers do. It's coaching one-on-one, protect the frigging ball.
Yeah, Fellaini reminded me of Big Bird in Sesame Street. We'd be walking around, we see just like feathers.
No, but because he was so big, it looked worse than it is. Yeah. You've got Carroll as well. He's all arms. You know, some players do it and are very successful in doing it.
Mm. Well, look, credit to United though for, you know, coming back from a goal behind. Obviously, Son scored the goal, which was, you know, typical. You know, the guy cheated and then he went up the other end and scored. But, you know, Fred's goal was absolutely brilliant. The build-up play was remarkable. One-touch football. Cavani's header from Greenwood's cross, fantastic. And this is what United brought him in for, right? To be that number nine. And you know, he's basically showing people, especially the Martial FC crew, what a number nine does.
Yeah, Martial and Edison Cavani shouldn't be in the same sentence because it's just so well, his runs are so, what's the word? It's just... unselfish as well, because most times you don't get them balls, but when you do, you know, he's lethal in the box, and they're just totally different players, mate. Just totally different players. Martial it doesn't work as hard. That shouldn't be in the same sentence. Edison for that, Cavani is a number nine, but, you know, he works tirelessly for his team, defends from the front and gets you goals. You know, he's strong, scores your headers in the box. He'll score outside the box as well. He's a proper number nine.
Mm. And Steve, Mason Greenwood made it three. Fantastic finish. But the goalkeeper beating at his near post. You're talking about a World Cup winning goalkeeper here.
Yeah, and it's probably the Mason Greenwood choice of goal. You know, the lollipops they call them, don't they? The step overs. And, you know, he's not really... doesn't look for that far side like Norman Whiteside in the cup final all those years ago. He often shoots at the near post, so you'd think the goalkeeper would have, you know, been ready for that one, but it appeared that he wasn't. He doesn't really go far post, Mason Greenwood, too often. So he scored his favourite goal. So, you know, the goalkeeping position of Spurs has looked lamer in the last 12 months as it is. When people have three lines, I always discuss, at the start of it, it's early promise. Then you've got potential and peak, and then you've got towards past it. And that's how the Tottenham back line looks a little bit to me at the moment. Certainly in the goalkeeping area, certainly capable, but you know, nowhere near peak or potential anymore. And I think that was evident with the near post poor effort at saving it.
Yeah. All right, let's do our Spurs post-mortem here, because I don't think we've done one all season, to be fair. What I will ask you guys is that, you know, when the plans for the new stadium were drawn out and people were saying, oh, the Spurs are going to suffer like Arsenal did, and then the other people saying, well, the infrastructure is completely different and yada, yada, yada. But if you think about it, it's pretty much the same. But that being said, COVID has obviously put a massive spanner in the works here, because obviously fans aren't allowed in the stadium. Spurs can't have the concerts that they planned. They can't have the NFL games that they planned. That extra income isn't coming in. And then you're looking at the wage bill. You can have players that have come in, players that they need to get rid of. Theo, listen, you know, you being a Chelsea fan, you must obviously love what's going on at Spurs. That being said, if you look at it objectively, it's a big rebuild, but the problems are from top to bottom, isn't it? It's not as if like you could say one area of the club needs fixing and once that's done, everything will change. This is a whole infrastructure, isn't it, mate?
Yeah, I'd have to agree. I think, if I'm not mistaken as well, wasn't the stadium over budget as well? I think it cost a lot more than it should have done. So, I think there's more, you know, the problems are more deep-rooted than I think a lot of some of the Spurs fans are probably ready to accept. Chairman's, you know, got a lot to answer for as well. Manager like Jose didn't really make sense, in my opinion, him going there in the first place. You know, I don't think it was ever going to work out, and it doesn't look like it's going to work out. There's questions around, they're obviously their best player. Is he going to stay? Is he going to go? Does he need to leave? You just mentioned about Lloris. You know, he seems to have been on the decline for the last, two seasons, I think. He's been on the decline. So there's still a lot of things there that needs to be addressed. You know, they've got Eric Dier playing centre-back. He's not a centre-back. You know, there's a lot that needs to be sorted out there. But
Theo, yeah. can I just add to something that you've absolutely nailed there as well? You think of Liverpool.
Yeah.
You've got Trent Alexander-Arnold. You think of Manchester United. You've got Marcus Rashford, Mason Greenwood. Think of Manchester City, you've got Phil Foden. You think of Chelsea, you've got Reece James and Mason Mount and more. When was the last time Tottenham developed one of their own that could be a great player for them, could be a sellable asset for them? If they're still saying Harry Kane is one of their own, and if the next one's Harry Winks, everything you've just said brilliantly there, but they're not growing their own either by the sounds of it and the looks of it.
And that's a big thing now as well, that you look at some of the bigger clubs. I don't know if we can call Tottenham, put Tottenham in that, but you know, their youth setups are amazing now. They've got brilliant youth setups, and they're nurturing the players that are coming through. They're using them. Harry Winks, he doesn't get games really, does he, for Tottenham at the moment? And when he does, he's coming on and he's giving out average performances as well. So,
we're one of the only clubs at the time who ignored the structure of the EPP and the restructure, which was almost mandatory that you had to do, but said, no, we'll do it our way and develop our own. And I think they were allowed to be. But I think that was actually respected. But the back end of it tells me there's nothing the other end of it that has been grown from it. So was that a wise decision? I'd have to say without the facts or the knowledge too much. But from what we can see, what they don't put on the team sheet, then it hasn't worked for them.
I'd have to agree. You know, it's worrying times for them because, you know, like I said, I'm sure the stadium was well over budget. They've still got a massive wage bill. They've got to offload their best asset, which is probably Harry Kane at some point. You know, they don't make Champions League this season. You put your house on it that he wants to go, if he wants to win stuff as well. I'm not saying that's the all and end of it, but if he wants to win stuff and does he want to be the player that's got, you know, a good career at Tottenham, but he hasn't got any medals to show for it, he hasn't got any trophies to show for it. Does he need to move on? The same with Son. You know, I think he's a decent player, but they've got to address them issues. But while Jose's there, they're not going to do any of them, I don't think. Or Levy.
I think it's scary how Spurs' youth academy isn't thriving like it should be. I remember when Hugo Ehiog was there, Tim Sherwood was there. There were so many promising players coming through. And now, as you quite rightly mentioned, it's only really Harry Winks and Harry Kane that have really come out of the academy in recent years. And Harry Kane is, 28, isn't he?
And still, Tanganga as well.
And the thing is, yeah, Tanganga, that's right. But Steve, when you look at the coaches at Spurs, I think Paul Bracewell is there, Perry Suckling is there, Ryan Mason, I think he's on the coaching staff, Chris Powell. So these are players that have played top level football.
Yeah. Well, I absolutely love Chris Powell, having worked for him. So I know that the players are in good care with him. I know that as a fact. And then, so they'll be getting well treated and well coached, that's for sure. But I think the gent who basically said, no, we're Tottenham Hotspur and we'll do our own thing, let the rest of the Premier League have the restructure of the EPP, was John McDermott. And I think he's actually left to go and work for the FA. So he's actually left them with not much of a legacy, it seems. On the back of this show tonight, I'm going to actually go and find out a bit more about it so that I'm better educated about it. But he definitely was leading the operation. I certainly didn't know Paul Bracewell was there. So I need to know a little bit more about it. But we can only judge. I think Wayne Burnett's there, a lad that I know. But that doesn't, you know, this. All I know is they seem to have good staff. You just reeled the load off there. And some of that I've actually worked with, but they don't seem to get any players through.
And this is, if you look at the comparison, and I'm sorry to deviate from it. If we look at, say, for example, Crystal Palace, you know, they're in Croydon ways, there's a big catchment, but they always seem to be bringing players through, or they seem to find players from lower league clubs. But then you look at Spurs, who obviously are a couple of levels ahead of Crystal Palace, not just financially, but obviously in their aspirations. They're in North London. You know, they're in North London, so effectively they can look at players in North London, Watford.
They're in a pot there, though, mate, where the players that they're looking for, are Chelsea looking for as well, so are Arsenal, so are City, so are United. So Tottenham are probably the bottom of that top list, if you know what I mean. So it's difficult for them to find. I'm agreeing with this. They still should be bringing players through with the quality of coaching they've got and the size of the club. But, you know, there's obviously something clearly wrong there because, you know, 2 years ago, they looked like they were half decent. Dele Alli, one of the top key players. Now he's out. That's got to be upsetting the dressing room or him putting his little pennies worth in. I'm pretty sure of that. Because he was a key player and now he's just out in the cold. So it's, and they haven't got that. You know, when he was at Chelsea, he could leave out a top player because he had proven winners there. All right, he wasn't proven winners when he got to Chelsea, but the character of him, John Terry, Frank Lampard, you know, he bought in Drogba, the centre half, the Portuguese fella that he bought.
Carvalho.
No, Ashley Cole, Peter Cech, you know. Tottenham got, they've got like who? Harry Kane and Son. Mm-hmm. That's it. So they can't leave a key player out like that and expect to carry on. You know, especially when they haven't brought anyone in to replace him, so and or got him out and replaced him. So you know, this is a big job there. And you know, watching the program last year, I thought it looked like all rosy, but there's clearly deeper issues there.
Rodri, I just thought of something else as well. You know, you look at Arsenal in that same area that you just said, that radius, and there might be players who aren't good enough for Arsenal, but their holding house must be miles better than Chelsea, better than Tottenham's, because there's one on loan at Newcastle, there's one on loan at West Brom. Now, it looks like their future lies away from Arsenal, but Arsenal are going to get 10, 15, 20 million for these lads who aren't good enough for
Sacco, Smith Rowe.
Yeah,
you know, there's a few coming through. Yeah,
but the ones who aren't coming through, they're going to get 10, 15 million for them regardless. Tottenham aren't getting them through to get in and aren't getting them through to just come short and to be sold somewhere else. So they actually lose twice.
And Chelsea have always, of late, had a fantastic youth system, but they don't seem to have, well, of late they have because Frank Lampard's given gains, but before that, they didn't seem to get game time at all. You know, there's a kid that the bloke at is it the Crystal Palace, West Brom, no, not West Brom.
Gallagher.
Loftus-Cheek.
Fulham.
Yeah, Fulham. Sorry. Yeah, yeah. You know, they've got players that have come through, and they don't seem to play in Chelsea. They seem to move them on. So, but Tottenham don't seem to have any players from Harry Kane, Harry Winks, but that's just two, and Harry Winks is 20 odd now. You should have a flow of them coming through, and it doesn't seem to be happening there.
Chelsea let players go, and they end up playing for AC Milan. So they, well,
this
they
is it. The players that are going out on loan, they're at top level clubs, man.
Yeah, where Tottenham players are going out to Forest Green, and no disrespect to Forest Green, but they're not AC Milan. So, there's
something wrong there at Tottenham.
Mm. Even Ross Barkley is still a Chelsea player.
It's clearly not coaching, because you've just reeled off. Paul Bracewell is a very good coach, a very, very good player. Chris Powell, Stez Wurtson, you got to listen to what he says. So, and you just need Brian Mason, an ex-Premier League player. So, and I know there's a couple more as well. So it's clearly not coaching. The coaching's right, but obviously the scouting and the players are bringing in are not right.
All right, one more thing on Spurs. Harry Kane, big rumours that he might leave at the end of the season. Now, we could guess which teams are going to be interested. Most teams in the world, I guess, will be interested, from Bayern Munich to Real Madrid to City to United. Anyone would want Harry Kane in their team. But the question is, how much is he going to go for? Because, again, if you look at the way the world is at the moment with this pandemic that has hit clubs in the pocket, are Spurs turning around saying, well, right, we've got an asking price, but realistically, we won't get that for this player because teams can't afford to spend what they want. And you've got the player who obviously has the power now. What happens, Steve? What happens from here?
My gut feeling is that he goes. I think it'll be a really close game, the League Cup final. Those Wembley finals appear to be slower. I give Tottenham more of a chance than people are suggesting against my own team, Manchester City. So they could still win a trophy, but we know they're not favourites. We're hopeful that they'll have a good Euros for us, for England, as the leader, as our best player, when all said and done. And this week and last week, they've been talking about his numbers being up there with Messi, Ronaldo and Lewandowski. So we know he's a talent. The only thing that Haaland has got on him is the age and the resale. Should a club want to develop him and move him on again, where Kane probably will finish his career probably at the next club he signs for, if he goes. But I think Theo mentioned it before. Does he want record appearances, record goals to back playing in that stadium for Tottenham Hotspur and be their man forever, which has a chance, and I'm sure that's what they're desperate for? Or does he forfeit that and just go for more glory and play for a better football team? And I think he will do that after the Euros. I think he'll sign for one of the clubs in this country in the top three. And my hunch, I think Roy Keane was hinting towards it yesterday. As I sit here now, possibly a bit romantic about it, I think Haaland will go to City and I think Kane will go to United.
Wow. When the teams were lining up yesterday, Harry Kane was lining up as captain, and then Harry Maguire come up and as the team and lined up, I looked at Harry Kane and he was looking at him out the corner of his eye, and my first thought was, he's thinking, I'm going to be playing for you next year. That's the thought that came into my head, the way he was looking at him, looking up and down, looking at that red and thinking. And that's the thought that came into my mind when I seen it.
I thought he knew the camera was on him and he was being patriotic and he was looking up at the picture of Prince Philip.
This is in the tunnel just before they come out.
Really?
Just as the Tottenham team are lined up in the tunnel, just before they come out, and then the United players come and line up with them, and then the Tottenham walked out, and then United walked out. But as he was saying, look at the corner of the eye, and that's what I thought at the time.
I think Keane was nudging it on the telly. He wanted, he didn't overcommit, he didn't even commit, but he just nudged it, and it got me alongside Keane thinking, yeah, maybe.
With the numbers he's got playing for Tottenham, them numbers are going to increase if he goes to City and Manchester United. There's no doubt about that. He's going to get more chances in better positions. So,
yeah, agree.
Rod, that's the same look I see when I drive past a building and it's got a sign that says Nando's opening soon. Theo, come on. Where's Harry Kane going to be next season? If he's not going to be at Spurs, that is.
Definitely in England. I think he's going to want to try and smash Shearer's record, isn't he?
Please hope he does.
Yeah, no, I think he's. I can't see him going abroad.
Who can afford him abroad, really? Bayern doesn't spend massive amounts of money on strikers. Real Madrid probably won't sign him. Barcelona is skint.
So he seemed like the home guy as well, didn't he?
That's my main reason. I don't think he wants to uproot. I think the furthest he'll go is up north, you know, still travelling distance back to wherever he lives down south. And, you know, it is a step up for him, obviously. You know, he's not going to win anything, if we're realistic. He's not going to win any major trophies at Tottenham anytime soon. You know, it fits the kind of idea that he can go to United and win things, even if Cavani's still there or, you know, he moves on, which whatever the case is. But I think United needs someone who can grab 20, 25, 30 goals a season, whatever he's going to do. I think he'd do that. And I agree with Steve. You know, I think Haaland's probably the better suited anyway for City. I can't see him going to any other club. Couldn't see him going to Liverpool. Couldn't see him come to Chelsea. Or obviously he will never go to Arsenal. So, you know, kind of rules all the other sort of ideas out.
Lads, on a side note, I've seen Manchester United are linked with Kieran Trippier. Now, I know Wan-Bissaka is getting better at defending, but they're looking for that more of attacking right back. And if Kieran Trippier was to possibly win La Liga in the next month and come home this summer, which is rumoured, then that could also strengthen the fact that Kane comes, that they are friends, ex-teammates. And as you said, Theo, 20, 25 goals a season, Kieran's played in seasons with him where he's probably set a dozen goals up for him.
Yeah.
So if they did do that, United are getting a guaranteed pattern and partnership, which has already been proven at Premier League domestic level. And when I saw Kieran linked with United, it also made me think I could see them two playing for United. Sorry to the Tottenham fans.
How long has he got left?
Atletico Madrid.
Yeah,
I presume it's a year. But it was a strong link that he was coming back to England with United, the front runners. And then obviously, you know, there's the Kane thing, and I think, like I say, straight away, the amount of time they've trained together, played for Tottenham, played in big games and played for England, you know, that is something I could honestly see happening.
I think, you know, with Tottenham, you know, they've got something to buy with, you know, maybe they want Martial and a bit of money to get something for it. You know, I think Martial is a kind of Tottenham player, isn't he?
Yeah, but would Jose want him? Because Jose didn't rate him at United.
True.
You didn't rate him.
Yeah,
rate
true.
Him at all.
I didn't think of that.
I'm sure there'll be another player that thing wants, that Mourinho wants.
But it's, you know, at the end of the day, it's Aaron Levy's the boss, and if it makes sense and they can maybe have him for 3 years and sell him on and still make money or keep the money.
Well, Jose signed Diego Dalo, he can have him. He signed Eric Bailly, he can have him. He signed Fred, he can have him. Wants them, take him. Take him. You can have a whole season with him. Take him.
Fred's prolific now.
Yeah, Fred. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. What was I going to say? Yeah, Steve, interesting you said that about Trippier and Kane. It wouldn't be the first time United signed two players that were mates, Di Maria and Rojo. I think the reason why United signed Rojo was to basically wipe Di Maria's ass.
Right. Well, I think Trippier would be doing more for Kane than that. I think no one's put crosses on his head better than Trippier in Kane's career. I think we're seeing that now in the Tottenham team. Nobody really puts the crosses in like Kieran Trippier for Kane. So it could be a ready-made recipe for improvement at Manchester United with summer recruitment.
I'm amazed that Wan-Bissaka's not got better as the season's gone on, because, you know, he's defending. You know, better at the right-back defending, but, you know, he's probably the worst at the right-backs for attacking. He just looks like he's crossing with flippers on. He's just can't get it right and can't pick a man out. So you think that he'd be working on that week in, week out, and you think he'd get better, but he's just really stayed the same.
Yeah, agree again.
Who's the defensive coach at United, though? Who's doing that kind of
thing? It's not a defensive problem, is it? It's the offensive. It's the crossing. So it's not a defensive problem. It's a crossing problem. He's crossing with flippers on his feet. He just can't, you know, he just can't wrap his foot round it. He just seems to just flat foot it every time.
He was a winger at Palace's academy. You know that?
Pardon?
He was actually a winger at Crystal Palace's academy.
Yeah, I just don't understand it, because, you know, when I was growing up and I was a winger, if I couldn't cross a ball, I won't get a game. So that's what I worked on. That's what I was best at, because that was my job. But as an offensive fullback, you know, you think, right, I need to work on this. Look at Luke Shaw, you know, how well he's doing. I need to match that. But, you know, it doesn't seem to bring some teams have done that. So maybe bringing Kieran Trippier in, or put a rocket up his arse and healthy competition, which we need.
Yeah.
All right. One more game before I wrap it up. Theo, if Arsenal win their remaining games, they can't win the league, but they'll end up on 72 points. So they'll be 2 points behind City at the moment. But they've got a good win against Sheffield United. I don't think there is much to say about Sheffield United. They're done. You know, we can
go on holiday.
Yeah, that's it. They're done and dusted. Yeah. They've been buried. But you know, you use social media probably just as much as I do, if not more than I do, because I rarely use Twitter. But when you look at the reaction from Arsenal fans to a 3-0 victory at Sheffield United with Lacazette scoring twice and Martinelli, who they're comparing to Ronaldo, R9, yeah, you've probably seen it. Again, are we talking about premature ejaculation here from their supporters again?
100%. 100%. I think the problem with Arsenal is they're relying on two of their best youngsters, which we've just touched on before. You know, Saka and Smith Rowe.
The Croydon and De Bruyne, yeah? The Croydon and De Bruyne.
Yeah, you know, since Aubameyang signed his deal, his new contract, he's not been the same. There's a lot of work. There's a lot of work that needs to be done at Arsenal. And where are they now? The ninth in the league now, aren't they, I think? So
let's have a look. Yeah, they're below Everton in ninth. Yeah.
Just below Everton, I think they've just drawn 0-0 with Brighton. But so you know, there's a lot of work to be done. Even if they was to make Europe, you know, Europa League, brilliant for them. But I still think there's a lot of work they need to do. They need to get rid of some of the deadwood that they've been carrying for the last couple of seasons. I think defensively, I think yesterday they started with Callum Chambers. Was it Rob Holden at the back as well? Well, are they really good enough to be Arsenal's?
I think Shaq was left back, wasn't he? If I'm not mistaken,
I think so.
Shaq left back.
Yeah, so I think are they good enough to be at Arsenal? I think one of the key things that they missed out on was getting rid of Martinez in goal. I think he's been, you know, watch Villa games a lot, and he's been really good for Villa. So to get rid of him and keep Leno, who was coming back from a bad injury anyway, didn't really make sense to me. But you know, can you really, you know, pop the champagne open because you beat Sheffield United 3-0? I don't think so. You know, I think Sheffield United are down and out now. They've got nothing to play for. They're probably all on holiday in their minds anyway. So you know, and Martinelli, I've got mixed opinions about him. I haven't seen much of him, so I can't really comment on him. But to compare him to R9, it just tells me the state of social media. You know, it's just it's one of those days where you just have to come off it if you see things like that.
And you know, the other thing that really frustrates me is like when you look at, you know, the video compilations of Thomas Partey, you know, the passing range that he shows. We know he's capable of doing that, but it's against Sheffield United, who are bottom and they're down and out. If he does that against Man City, if he does it against Liverpool, if he does it against Chelsea, then fair enough. I would say, well done, mate. But he hasn't done anything. He hasn't done anything. And, you know, I shouldn't really take the bait, to be honest, because that's effectively what they're doing. I think they're just doing it to get a rise out of people. But, you know, again, I look at that squad, and the one person I feel sorry for the most is Lacazette. Because he came to England with big price tag, big reputation, scoring goals left, right and centre in Ligue 1. Didn't quite do it in his first season. Change of manager. Now he's expected to do a lot of donkey work, tracking back, doing things that you wouldn't expect from a centre forward. You know, and he seems to be the one that is really showing some kind of, what's the word, impetus, some kind of, to be that leader. That's how it seems to me. He's more of a leader than Aubameyang. Let's be real.
13 goals this season, I think, as well.
That's good for him, man. Come on.
You know, that's good. And he's missed quite a few games, but I just think there's a lot that, you know, even if they get into Europa, the best thing for me, Arsenal's opinion, is that they miss out on Europe this season. They spend the season rebuilding, get rid of the deadwood. You know, I think Liverpool had to do it one season. I think we've definitely had to do it as a couple of seasons as well. You know, you have to get rid of the deadwood and just take, you know, going into Europe isn't always everyone celebrates it, but it's not always a good thing. You know, I think if you want to try and rebuild, you can't rebuild if you're playing on a Thursday and then you got a game on a Sunday and you're playing catch up every week. So you need to sometimes sit out Europe, and I know financially it's obviously better for the clubs, but You know, for me, I think, you know, you've got to sit out sometimes and rebuild properly. And they haven't done that. That's one thing they haven't done is rebuilt the team. You know, the way, obviously, we spoke about it, and I'm sure you guys have as well, but Ozil, you know, how do you replace someone like Ozil? You know, it's, yeah, it's just a strange one for me for Arsenal. You know, they've got a lot of work to do there, and I don't know if Arteta's the right man for the job.
Fair enough. Well, that's it for another episode, gentlemen. Theo, thank you for joining us. Before I let you go, mate, do you want to plug your Twitter and your social media and your other podcast?
Yeah, so my personal Twitter is t_producer. Make music in my spare time. Haven't done it for ages. It seems like my podcast at the moment, but you can catch me on a podcast as well called Play to the Whistle. So you can follow that on the PTTW podcast. On Twitter and Instagram, weekly episodes as well. But it's a pleasure to obviously come on and shoot the defense, and thanks for having me as well.
Absolute pleasure, mate. Steve, thank you very much, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Speak to you soon, Steve. Thanks for having me, mate.
See you. You're on mute.
Fucking dog was barking. See you next week.
Yeah, what's your Twitter? At Rod James Giggs, right?
At Rod James Giggs, yeah.
Okay, great. One more thing. Jose Mourinho was very critical of Ollie about, you know, the comments about if my kid went down and he had all of his mates around him and yada, 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 I wouldn't give him any food. And Jose Mourinho was saying that Son's dad is a better dad than Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. So here's a question. Who's a better dad, Solskjaer or Dwight York? I'll leave it at that. Until next time, take care.